When I saw Brenda's thing come through about our last class, I went, what? Because in my head, this isn't the last class. In my head, next week is when it all, we bring it all together, right? And so I was like, oh yeah, but it is actually the technically the last class, right? So why don't we start with the meditation just to kind of get us started. But Kathleen, how you doing?
We'll see how well I do. I woke up feeling better this morning. So, okay. This is day 10, 11, I think, for Vince. I got sick 4 days after. Well, he started on a Wednesday and then, yeah, by Saturday night, I was sick.
So this is a week for you now?
This is a week for me and 10, 11 days for him, right?
And he's still
worse than I am. Yeah, he's still sick. He got bronchitis on top of it.
Oh, Kathleen, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. So it's been, you know, and when we both got sick, I'm not stressed. I mean, I honestly believe I have survived this more than anything because I was in a really, you know what I mean? I'm not stressed. And I mean, we were eating healthy and like always, but he was super, super, super stressed. So,
and added to the whole burden on the body, huh?
Right. Right. So that's a true testament to that. I can tell you right now. So, yeah. So it's been a long week and a half.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I know when we had it, I didn't get it as bad as Bill. Bill had it much, much harder.
Yeah.
And long recovery. Took months for him to come back completely. Yeah.
Okay. So, well, yeah.
But, you know, yeah. Well, here's what we're doing today. We're doing Tonglen, which is always nice, right? For easing suffering. So.
Right.
Well, so let's start with a short meditation just to bring in. And Kathleen, you just, when you need to just bail. Okay. If you're not there, we'll know what happened. Okay.
All right.
You just, cause I know the energy can be really.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's find our seats, beautiful ones. So good to see everyone. See Kelsey and Lisa and Kathleen and April and Lisa with two eyes and Laura. Ramon and Brenda. We'll just hold Steve with us. He can't be with us today, I don't think. He's going to try. We'll see. And take a moment to drop into your body. Anywhere in your body that can help to bring you present. And then use your breath, that beautiful, simple, easy three-part inhale. And as you exhale through your mouth, engage that, the parasympathetic nervous system. Allow it to help you begin to release and soften. And so your face is softening. I see those jaws softening, beautiful. We let that softness move into the shoulders, and from the shoulders, it's like you just pressed a button and you can feel the softness beginning to move down through the body. Can you feel yourself getting so heavy in your buttocks and your seat that you can feel your abdomen soften? You can feel your thighs soften. And sometimes it really helps to focus on literally just softening the buttocks, those butt cheeks, just soft, soft, soft. And let's take a moment to listen to the sounds around us.
And then very gently come back to your breath. Cool on the inhale. And as you add that awareness of the temperature of the exhale, hold a knowing that what has changed the temperature of the exhale is the warmth of your body. It's the warmth of your body. So it's cool coming in. And as it moves into the chest, into the lungs, into that heart center, it warms as you exhale. And just notice that there's nothing you have to consciously do to change the temperature of this breath. It just happens. There's something in your being, in your body, that does it automatically. You don't have to force it, be in charge of it, control it, direct it. It knows what to do. We simply allow it. We follow it. We trust it. We just let the body do what it does. So let's take just a minute or so and simply be with, no Hong San, no nothing. Just be with the temperature of the breath in your nostrils. And for our last couple breaths, maybe hold an attitude of wonder at the amazing wondrousness of this ability of the body without any input from you to do this. And now gently inhale. Deep into the belly as you exhale, soften from your crown to your toes. And let's open with our invocation where we say, O Great Spirit, saints and sages of all religions, all places, all times, and for each of us to our own precious Ishta Devata, we bow to you all. And we ask you to sweep clear the obstacles on our path. And now I've got three different words going through my head. Which invocation am I doing right now? I don't know. Let me start again and let's see what comes. Oh my God. Okay, here we go. Oh, Great Spirit, saints and sages of all religions, all places, all times, to my own precious Ishta Devata, I bow to you all. Sweep clear the obstacles on our path and lead us to that other shore of that ocean of awareness. Oh, ye powers that be, Help us to awaken in all aspiring souls your eternal wisdom and unselfish love. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. And then just because, what's your intention for today? Bring it in. Bring it into your awareness, into your heart, into your body. And hold it there. The feeling of it I don't know the word for this thing you do, but it's whatever, as that rudder that's going to guide you through this class this morning, so that you will have the clarity to ask the questions that need to be asked for you, to have the insights that are here for you. And as the official beginning of our last official class together, let's together give an Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Inhale. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. And then when you're ready, just gently inhale. As you exhale, open your eyes. And I have to admit, I had a moment of like, oh, I wish we could have all heard each other voice, our voices together on that one. But Agnieszka is going to be a little bit late, but she will be here. So I think knowing how Kathleen feels, I'm going to get us going with Tonglen, which is the kind of the closing technique we're going to really focus on today, right? Another version of it, but hopefully building a little more understanding of the what makes this technique work, why it's so, like, it's, you know, top three, right? Hong Sa, Tonglen, and then I don't know, put whatever you want as number three, but Hong Sa, Tonglen. Top two. For me, I think it's what we've come to call the RAIN technique is my number three, because I use it so, it was so transformational for me. But certainly Tonglen is it's kind of got all of it in one. It's like Hong Sa to me. It's like everything in one technique. And on some level, and we tapped into this briefly at the retreat, and we do at most retreats, there is not much difference between Hong Sa and Tonglen. So just tuck that in the back of your head and let's move forward from here. So what I want to do is, I want to jump forward, because I'm aware of how Kathleen feels, and we only have a little bit of time. So we will take a moment late at some point to check in with everybody and see how you're doing. But let me see if I can get some of this for you in Tonglen. We have done the version of Tonglen where you do it for yourself, right? Where it's your anger, it's your hurt, it's your sorrow, it's your frustration. It's you who's experiencing the feeling. And that version of Tonglen is one thing. It's still, you know, leaning into the feeling. It's building an incredible courage courage to be with suffering, right? Because nobody wants to be with suffering. We all just like, I'm out of here, right? But Tonglen is about finding the courage to be with suffering and the willingness to relieve it. This is a key concept. So this is not a small thing to do Tonglen. Doing Tonglen says, I have the courage to sit here and enter into my suffering without resisting it, without avoiding it, without denying it, right? I mean, right? And it also means you have a willingness to say, I want to change. I want to do this differently. Which the fact that you've been in this program for these 8.5 months, you're willing to do things differently. That's phenomenal. How many people are really willing to do things differently? Yeah, not, right? Yeah. I mean, and really, and it, no judgment. I mean, I was there for a long time, but to do things differently means we have to change. And that's much harder than sitting around and bitching about everybody else and how they should change and how if they just did it your way, life would be great, right? So this is, so hats off, bows to you for showing up for this 8.5 months to do this, right? And Tonglen is kind of like the epitome of it to me, because Tonglen is saying, yes, I have the courage. I'm here and I have the willingness to change me, to change me, to change me. And you have this and you're good. You've got it. You've got it. You've got it. You've got what you need to walk this path. Even in those times and those moments where you think you're alone, which I know you're never alone. I know that from my own experience. My hope is that the day comes where each one of you knows it in your bones, in your body, in your being, that you are not alone. You are so not alone. Okay. So given that, first version of Tonglen we learned was to relieve our suffering, which is where we recognized where we were feeling it. We allowed ourselves to feel it. We leaned into the feeling. And as we did, we told ourselves, okay, other people feel this way too. I'm not alone. There's nothing wrong with me. And then as we breathe in, that alone brings some relief. We tap into that relief and we have a sense of compassion that grows for, wow, other people feel this too. This fucking sucks. I wish they didn't have to feel this way. I wish I didn't have to, I wish we didn't have to feel this way. And we build a sense of compassion that then becomes a sense of, this isn't going to last. This isn't going to last. This isn't going to last. I wish none of us had to feel this way. I wish none of us had to feel this way. And we have this compassion that just grows. And we, as we visualize the suffering coming in as, if you're up for it, a darkness, or, and we're breathing out a light. So we breathe in dark, we breathe out light and white. And just so you're clear, I want to say this in your notes, it's going to say other people feel this way too. This isn't going to last. I wish they hadn't have to suffer. So I said it, I didn't say it in exactly the right order. So that is the right order. Okay. All right. What happens is somewhere in there, something shifts. And we've learned that we just be there as long as we are comfortable.
Can you repeat that one more time then, if that's the order?
The order is other people feel this way too, which subtext, I'm not alone. There's nothing wrong with me. Step number two, this isn't going to last forever. Subtext.
I know.
Okay, hold on. Let me mute Agnieszka there. Subtext is, there's nothing on the planet that's been here forever and will be here forever. There's nothing in the universe that's been here forever, will be here forever. This that I'm going through, much as my brain feels like it's forever and I'm going to fall into this pit and never climb out. It's impossible. It's literally impossible for something to last forever, right? So subtext is this all our training and learning about impermanence, right? And then third, there's a part of us that just opens to this thought that this sucks so much. I wish nobody had to feel this ever. I wish nobody ever had to feel this feeling. And at this point, we can diverge in two little directions here. One is a little more advanced. One says, I wish nobody else had to feel this way. I don't want to feel this way. I wish none of us had to feel this way. And we have a compassion that comes from, I wish nobody had to feel this way. Second, brings in this thought that I wish no one had to feel this way, and I wish I could take this suffering from them so they wouldn't have to feel this way. Which, if you have kids, you've all felt that moment where you just say, I wish my child didn't have to suffer like this. I wish I could take it from them. So you know this feeling. But it's a little more of a complicated feeling, because sometimes we're in the middle of our own stuff. The thought that other people are feeling it, it's like, really all I want to do is ease me. You know, it takes a little bit of maturity to go to the next step where I wish other people didn't have to feel it. And to really, this is that bodhisattva outlook, which is that I wish I could take all your suffering away from you so you wouldn't have to take it. You wouldn't have to feel it. There's that's the deep, deep well of compassion, right? And mystically, why is this so important? Because mystically, everybody is a reflection of you. So as you are wishing to take everybody's suffering away from them so they wouldn't have to feel it, you're wishing that you didn't have to take it. You're taking it from you're taking your own suffering away. And please tell me we talked about this last week, didn't we? About how the eye can't see its own eye. We didn't talk about that? Brenda's looking like we didn't.
I remember it, but I don't know if it was in the group class or not. I'm not sure.
You know what it was? It was the rain workshop.
Oh.
Some of you were in that rain workshop. We've got that rain workshop had a lot of the live without anxiety people in it. And so I went places I don't usually go in a rain workshop. It was like an advanced class. So let me say this to you guys, because if I haven't said it in this class, this is important to say. On a mystical level, the teaching is that there's only you. There's only you. There's only you. All of this is, and you don't have to believe this, but just hang in here with me, is a projection of your mind. It's created this whole luscious, rich, complicated story. And every character in this is a part of you. If you go with this thought, this is a projection of you, because you can't see you. Just like I can't see my eye unless I look in here and I try and look at my eye. The eye can't see its own eye. And in the same way, we can't see ourselves. And the reason we've projected all of this out here is so we can see and understand the incredible richness and complexity of all that there is. So and some of you know this on a real simplistic level. It's like, I used to think I was so kind and so nice and so sweet, you know, and I was a good mom, you know, and the reality was I was a bitch, you know, because in my mind, I had justified that all of my responses are in response to other people. And if they would just behave the way I wanted to them to, I would be a nice, kind person. But in reality, what it is I had a lot of anger and frustration and need to control and fear inside me. The only way I could see that, because my mind is so clever at convincing myself I'm this kind, considerate, nice person, because there are parts of me that are kind and nice and considerate, right? So I let that become the whole story. But what happens is that all these other people come into my life and they say, ooh, look, you just got irritated that you're not understanding, compassionate. You're irritable. Oh, look at you. Ooh, look how judgmental you're being about that. It takes me seeing my reaction to the other people in my world show me who I am inside. They show me who I am inside. So this comes back to when we talked about karma. They are the bringers of our karma, which we talked about in the Live Without Anxiety class a bit. So, you know, this is a beautifully rich, fun topic to talk about, that how we are not, none of this is real. This is all projection of our mind. And ultimately, there's only you and the projections of your mind, which is beyond the scope of this class. So I'm going to introduce that, just that, as a way of just saying, on a mystical level, everybody in your world is a reflection of a part of you. And the way you respond to them tells you how deep your love, your acceptance, your non-judgmentalness goes. How deep your ability to be understanding and compassionate goes. So when we do Tonglen, and we wish to take away the suffering of all these other people, we take it on so they don't have to feel it. On a deep mystical level, we're doing it for ourselves. We're bringing ourselves completely into wholeness and balance. So I have no idea if that made any sense, but we went there. Kathleen, were you going to say something? Okay. Anybody, any questions on that? This is the kind of thing that you might have made a little sense today. Might have been just like, I don't know what the fuck she's talking about. But over time, you'll start to get it. You'll start, because you'll realize that, well, I don't know that I need to say much more. Lisa, go ahead. Yeah.
I'm wondering, is it more about being aware of their reactions to us or responses, or is it something triggering in us? Because this could cross over quick to victim blaming and, like, you know, even though maybe that is the karma that I chose in this life. How do you deal with that? If everyone is a reflection of us in an abusive situation, I know I always bring it back to this, but, like, what could you be asking yourself? Because, I mean, part of that could be getting stronger and leaving, not just sitting in it and accepting that person and taking the blame for their behavior. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No, we don't take the blame for anybody's behavior. I mean, this is on a really bottom line, deep level. It's like, you know, so just as nobody's to blame for our reactions and our behavior, we are not to blame for anybody else's behavior either. And yes, we want to become strong enough to be whole. And when we're whole, it's easy to look at something and go, no, no. Okay, you can be that way, but I'm not going to be around that. And the difference is that we move out of situations, not out of fear. I mean, as I always say, if it's a abusive situation that is harming you physically, emotionally is a little dicier thing to determine, right? You do need to get out, right? Which is just the strength to get out is the growth, right? But there is a huge difference between being angry and judgmental and hating and going, oh, yeah, that person is really struggling. Or whatever hang on, just a second. Let me finish the thought. And having compassion for them. Having compassion, you don't have to fix it. Compassion doesn't mean you have to fix it. It just means you're not judging it. You're accepting it. It's at that point, I don't know if I'm going to say this in a way that is acceptable, but at that point, it's like you've just accepted the parts of you that are also ugly and judgmental and angry. And it's accepting all of that as life. That's this piece, which we go more into this in the level 2 training, but it's this piece of the Gita, which says where Krishna goes to, I mean, Arjuna, who's kind of the protagonist of the story, goes to Krishna, Krishna is a symbol of God at this point, for lack of a better word. And Arjuna's starting to really get it, what's going on. And he says, hey, no, who are you actually? I mean, like, really, who are you? And Krishna goes, you really don't want to know. This is too much. You're not going to be able to handle it. And Arjuna goes, no, really, I can take it. I want to know who you are. And so Krishna reveals himself as the splendor, the majesty, the beauty, the love, the joy, and the hate and the darkness and the destruction. It's all of it. And we call this the face of glory. It's everything. And our journey is to be able to accept all of it. Just accept it. It's part of life. Oh, I'm going to tear up because it's so, this is life. And our ability to look at the ugly, the evil, and maybe not even name it evil, but just look at it as this is part of life. That's your wisdom. That's your strength. That's your courage. It doesn't mean you don't try to live from a place of love, but it's, you don't judge. You don't judge. Did that answer it? Okay. All right. Okay. So, April, go ahead. Yeah. Oh, I'm just so, I have to tell you, some of you have probably already had this, or you have this moment where you just recognize that it's all part, and I'm going to use the word God, which I rarely use, but it's because I don't know another way to say it. I've said it that way to bust apart our vision of what God is. It's all part of the all. It's part of reality. It's part of the whole. All of it is part of the whole. And those moments where you can be in the midst of the darkness and the suffering and all of this, it's why I think it's that word bittersweet. It's like a bittersweet knowing, and you realize how strong you are, that you can hold all of it. You can hold all of it. You can hold all of it. And I'm not there all the time, but I've had those moments, and you have that moment and it changes you. It's like, I just can't look at the world. I can't look at politics. I can't work any of it the same way anymore. It's bigger. It's bigger than all of this. Anyway. So April, you're going to ask a question. Go ahead.
Oh, no, it wasn't even a question. It was just it was like this instant little like, oh, that reminds me of something I read that was the simplest thing ever. And it was, meditation does not mean inaction. It's not a replacement for action. So I forget where I read it. But it reminded me of this right here that we have an opportunity to, even Tonglen, the whole point of Tonglen is action. There's movement, right? It's doing something. It's
internal action, you mean?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But something is changing, right? So that, again, it goes back to the law of impermanence. Something is changing inside of us. So when we bump up against things that can seem like, well, we just have to, you know, look at ourselves and we can collapse around that idea. This happened to me just this last couple of weeks of this. We see if we're looking at other people as a reflection of us, it could be really easy to collapse around like, wow, I am really shit. If that's what I'm looking at, what does that mean of me? And it was an opportunity to sit with that feeling of, wow, what is that? It's like, it's just these layers that just keep coming and surfacing up and saying, okay, there's something that I can work on, but that is all action. There's something to do, which means, anyway, I don't know if I'm making any sense, but.
Well, let's pull it back to the word Kriya, which, you know, the foundation of the yoga side of what we do comes out of my training in Kriya yoga, right? And then we've got the Buddhist side, which comes out of my training with the Tibetan teachers, right? The Nyingma tradition of Tibetan Buddhism. Kriya means action. It means to do. Kriya means action. And the path of Kriya Yoga is about living fully, consciously. We call it, it's the path of balanced self-conscious awareness. Balance means you're bringing all your pieces back. Self-conscious, not self-conscious like, oh, I'm shy or I'm embarrassed. Self-conscious as in, oh, I know who I am. I understand that I am not this body. I'm not this mind. I'm not these emotions. I am something eternal, and becoming more and more aware of that every day by interacting in the world, which is looking at everybody's a bringer of my karma. Everybody's a bringer of my karma. They are showing my reaction is telling me who I am. My reaction to that. And then what the Buddhist side gives is the compassion for ourselves as we grow little by little and as we fuck up little by little, you know, we just, that compassion comes in and it's like, oh, it's okay. And between the two, it's like, you know, we have what we need. It's magnificent. It's absolutely magnificent, in my opinion. Kelsey, yeah.
I feel like you just answered it, but I'm going to ask anyway. Because for me, it's easier when my reaction is more aggressive towards someone else to comprehend this conversation. But so often I find that my reaction is critical. It comes back to me. I'm being critical of myself. I've done something wrong. I'm the bad person here. And so then with this idea of like the eye on the outside, but we can't see ourselves. It's not a very like clearly formulated question, but I guess my question is like, what do we do with that? Is it the compassion piece? Right? Like, I don't know. It's easier for me to have compassion towards others than towards myself. So.
Yeah. 'Cause we're Westerners, right? We're from the West. It's just when we have been taught. I mean, what were you taught about being nice to yourself, about being kind to yourself, right? It was just, we don't do that. We're hard on ourselves. The only way to get ahead is to be hard on yourselves, push yourselves. We're watching this show right now called Sex Education. Our son told us onto that. Oh my God. It's hysterical. It's wonderful. It's like for every one of us who was raised Catholic, it's like if we had had this show when we were teenagers, it's like, oh my God. Oh my God. Life would have been different. You know, it's like sex is so normalized. You know, gayness is normalized. It's mind boggling. Any rate, there is a kid in the show who's, got two moms, and one of them is pushing him to be a star on the swim team, right? And he's never good enough. There is nothing he can do where it's ever good enough, because it's that Western mentality of if we don't push you, you're not going to rise. You're not going to get better. The other mom is like, you know, wow, just let him be. Just let him be. It's okay. But that mindset is deep inside every single one of us, just because we've been raised in the West, right? And so there's nothing wrong with that. That's the culture you came into. And we are learning how to be kind and gentle with ourselves. And which is why I think, you know, my curriculum for all the group meditations is based around you guys, right? From this class. But this stuff we're working with this round to really start to really hold a sincere wish to be without suffering, right? That meditation, for those of you, I don't know which night I started it. I may not have done it till Thursday, but we've done it where you visualize yourself as a child and then in your 20s, right? I mean, that is working way deep underneath the layers. And I think it wasn't until Thursday's class that I had everybody hold hands. You hold hands with your people. You hold hands with them at the end. And we say it all together, and then we let them dissolve back into you one at a time. This kind of technique literally just seeps into places inside you that you don't even realize. And I found for me, this way has been the most effective at helping me to shift where I can be kind to myself and gentle myself. So it's a process. And there's, you're total normal Westerner, Kelsey, even though you spent time in Korea, right? It's like we got so much of the West in us. Yeah. And you want to, can I tell you something? I haven't told my husband this yet. I'm going to tell it to him, in the next couple of days, but Bill has gotten so much gentler since we've been doing this. It's really been kind of interesting to watch him with the grandkids, with his kids, with me. And there's nothing that you could just go boom, boom, cause, effect. It's underneath it. It shifts us really. I like the word. It just seeps into places where we don't even realize. So yes, Kelsey, that's the long answer to, yep, welcome to being a Westerner. But we're going to get there. We will get there little by little, you know? Did that answer it?
Yes. I mean, it answered the action part of it. I guess my other question was, like, if other people are reflections of us, what are these reflections we have about ourselves? Just another reflection of us? Like, just another facet of that? Does that make sense?
When you say these other reflections we have of ourselves, are you talking about your feelings, your thoughts, your emotions? What do you mean?
No, I mean this mystical way of seeing the world and seeing everybody else, right? If everything else is a projection, is it just that like we have internal and external projections?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Exactly. When we go, we're going to do, I think next fall we're doing a series on death, dying and rebirth. And one of the premises for that is that we train ourselves, because this is what people who are training to die consciously need to understand. Because when you die, what you're going to meet are your, not just the projections on this physical world that we can see, but the mental projections. So part of the training is to realize that everything in your mind is a projection also. And to not confuse them for the truth of who you are. And so, and I'm still doing this training. I'm not saying this, telling you that I've mastered this yet, but the training is to become more and more aware that all of its projection, all of its projection, all of its projection. So you can die consciously and then consciously choose what comes next for you. I wonder, Ramon or Anyeshka, did either one of you take Kriyananda's, the Astral of Rebirth class?
I haven't taken that one, but he has talked about it in other lectures that he does. He does speak to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. So we'll cover that. That's, I mean, really, when you get into this place where even your thoughts are projections, we're getting into the deep Buddhism, deep yoga mysticism, you know, it's for now, what it does is it starts to train us to remember that the only thing we really have is our reaction. Our reactions tell us who we are. Our responses tell us who we are. So when something comes at us from the outside world, our response to it is what we're paying attention to. It's not about that. It's not about Josh. It's not about Trump. It's not about Clinton. It's not about, oh wait, who's our president? Biden. It's not about, you know, it's not about any of that. It's not about if your kid is on drugs. It's not about if your husband is cheating on you. It's not about that. It appears to be about that because we're in this world. And yes, we're going to show up, but it's about how are we inside. It's about us facing our fear, us facing our need to, our judgments, us facing our places of despair and, you know, recognizing catastrophic thinking. It's about that. It's about training that. It's about training that, which is why, you know, there's not a lot of people walking this path. Let's be clear. This is why most people, this is the point of meditation where a lot of people drop off the sled. It's like, okay, I'm happy just being mindful in the moment. Let me just be present in my body. Wait, this is all me in here, and I don't get to blame everybody else out there. It's like, this is a harder path. And so yes, the short answer is yes, your mind is also all projections. And those moments, and you had them at the retreat where you were just awareness. You were just awareness. And then I understand there are people who can be there and still function on this earth plane and do stuff. People like Kriyananda and my Tibetan teachers. I was told we were supposed to keep secret who the teacher was in Tibet because he's under, you know, the Chinese government is life-threatening for the guy. But I've just found out they're talking about him at other places here in the States now, but his name's, it's Adzum Rinpoche. And he's one of those people who's can live in both worlds. It's not a thing most of us can do. All right. So at any rate, I'm way off track. Except that we're not off track because Tonglen is about. That was my last little point, my last little nugget for you on the one we've already learned, that ultimately that place of being able to touch that compassion that says, I wish nobody had to suffer. I wish I could just take all of their suffering away from them so they wouldn't have to. That is the compassion. That right there is it, right? Okay, so that's Tonglen version personal. And then there's Tonglen that we do for others. And what I'd like to do is take us through this in a little more step-by-step way because, you know, we've talked about how there's this place within us, right? That radiant Vajra in the center of our being that is eternal, this is the light, the radiance, the awareness of who we are. And Tonglen, when we're doing it for other people, it's about taking away their suffering and giving back strength, compassion, joy, peace. Okay? So a lot of times you'll hear Tonglen described as taking and giving. Sometimes they say giving and receiving, but taking and giving Lisa.
If this is not a quick question, just tell me, but how I had this same problem with praying when I was Christian that way. It's like, how do I know this isn't what they're supposed to be going through? How come it's not more about just sitting there with them and holding them during that experience? I don't even, you know, like I'm trying to divide that.
We're not with Tonglen. That's an excellent, excellent question. Because we don't have the right to interfere, right? So, but what Tonglen is doing is it's saying it's a way of sending strength, compassion. Isn't it nice when you're suffering to be around somebody who's not trying to fix you, but who just understands you? Right? Who just listens to you and feels for you, right? And it's sending, I like the word strength. It's sending strength, it's sending courage, it's sending feelings of peace, but ultimately, oh shit, all my bells are in with the kids in the garage for the Mindful Monkeys. When we ring the bell, where's the sound of the bell the strongest? In the bell, right? In the center of the bell. I ring that bell. You all hear it. When I do, but the sound is the strongest in the middle of the bell. When I'm doing Tonglen, I'm sending it I'm sending it out. But where is that feeling the strongest? Who is it changing really? Me. When I'm doing periods of practice a lot with Tonglen, I'm different. Although I've been doing a lot of it this morning and I got it this morning, I was a little bitchy at my husband, but you know, sometimes they say it's because when you hit those moments where you're just like so filled and transcended, it opens up space for old stuff to come up. And so Anne and Harvey warned us that when you have periods of just really beautiful experience, don't be surprised if behind it, some of that other gunk comes up. And this morning, my husband and I were sitting there and I was like, you know, blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden I were like, ooh, a little irritated, huh, Karen? Just because I've been doing so much tongue gland and it's like, okay, sorry, you know, it's like the orange, right? There's still a little that's still deep down in there and it's old stuff. It's old stuff that's still trying to work its way out, the residue. So did that answer it, Lisa? Okay. So I'm trying to think. Kathleen, how are you holding up? Yes, you're good? Okay. If we were to, let me see. How do I want to do this? Okay, let me say this. And then I think what I want to do is take a short break because I'm going to say this. And then let's have a few people just kind of check in, tell us how they're doing. We'll take a break. We'll come back, do a little more of this next level of tongue gland, and we can check in a little more. So here's the thing. Bodhicitta. B-O-D. D-H-I-C-H-I-T-T-A, bodhicitta, is like the awakened heart. It's the open awakened heart. And all of these practices we're doing are awakening bodhicitta within us. Okay? When we're doing tonglen, what we don't want is to breathe in, take away somebody's suffering and then have it stuck inside us, right? That's not the point. The whole point of tonglen is predicated on the imperative that there be bodhicitta or an awareness of this at the heart center. And depending on where you are in your practice, you may have this right there already. It's all good. It's there, right? But for most of us, we need to kindle it. It's like we need to spark it. We need to wake it up, right? And so what I'm going to give you now is a really gentle way in to waking up the bodhicitta, which you always want to do. It's a flash. It's a moment before you start breathing tonglen for someone else. Does that make sense? So like if you're in a good place in your life and your heart is already open and filled with compassion, boom, you see someone suffering, you think of it, you can just start right then and there. If you're not quite there, then this is a way to open up that space so that we never, ever, ever drink in or take on someone's suffering without this being a place of compassion already. Does that make sense? So this is the difference between doing it for yourself and doing it for another person. I want to be really, really, really clear on this, okay? Does everybody get that? Any question about that? Because it's essential that we understand the difference. Yeah, Agnieszka.
I have a question about I mean, if you feel hurt by someone, then I guess you would not feel that compassion. But otherwise, does it make sense that you usually feel compassionate? I mean, that you usually, how would you know your heart is not in a place where you can do it for someone, breathe tonglen for someone?
You would start breathing it in and your heart, you'd be a little tight that's a good question. How do you know? Because you're doing it you're just doing the motions, but you're not in it. It's like if your heart is tight, if there's no compassion or something in there, you'll know. You'll start breathing it in and it's like, eh. Or you start drinking in and you start feeling whatever their pain is. If you're feeling their pain in here while you're doing it, then no. We're not drinking on their suffering. Does that make sense?
So, right. So if emotions come up, it means I am not in a good place to do it.
If emotions, like, can you give me an example of what you mean?
Yeah, by right, like sadness. Because I remember once you said that if you think you're compassionate for someone, but the sadness comes up, it's your own stuff. It's your own stuff coming up. It's not, you're not really being compassionate. You're being sad for yourself. So.
Yes. So we go back and we do our own tonglen to get ourselves filled with compassion so that we can go back to doing the others. Tonglen, it's like there's the way it's taught, right? And most of the teaching on Tonglen, there's a few places it's written down, but most of it is oral because it's a fluid practice. And what you want to be really aware of, and Pema Chodron was really clear on this, is when you're doing it, if it's, you start to feel those other feelings, then you let go of doing it for the other person and you address what's going on for you and come back to this. And then by the time you come back to that compassionate place for yourself, you may be complete, or you may then be able to continue and breathe Tonglen for the other person. But this is why I like to think of Tonglen as almost, how do I say this? It takes discrimination and wisdom, and it takes an ability to be aware of who you are, so that you have the wisdom when it's starting to hurt, when you're starting to tighten in, the wisdom to go, this is me. Let me do me. And you're not going to follow it step by step by step by step by rule, right? You're going to go, oh, this is about me right now. Okay. Let me breathe into my own sadness. Oh, other people feel this way too. Oh, okay. This isn't going to last. Let me just be with this. All right. Okay. Oh, yeah. This is hard. All right. Let me breathe into it. I wish I didn't have to feel this. I wish other people didn't have to feel this. Oh, and then you can feel the compassion starting to come, and you can feel your whole heart open. And that may be the completion of the practice right there. Follow me? Of the technique. It might be that that's enough, because the idea is for us to feel compassion. And then you'll decide at that moment if it's okay, if you want to continue and breathe compassion for the other person, or you might be worn out, at which point you take a break and you go take a bath or something. Did that make sense, Agnieszka, what I said? I think we froze a little bit. Yes, were you able to hear that?
Yeah. Yes. Can you hear me? Because
yeah,
my computer is still frozen.
We can hear you.
Okay. So yes, it was helpful, and it seems, I mean, kind of the answer that came to me as you were talking is that I just need to practice it, and it'll evolve on its own. But it's good to know that it's not, you do this, right? You can kind of work with it as different things show up.
Yes.
So thank you.
Exactly. Which is why the first one we teach you is how to do it for yourself. Right? So that if you're doing it for someone else and something comes up, you know what to do. Right? And maybe think of Tonglen, it's almost like an art. I'm giving you part one, do it for yourself. I'm giving you there's lots of versions of part this, doing it for other people. And it takes your wisdom and your practice and your to figure out how to use them together. Yeah. Hang on, Brenda. I think Lisa had a question first. Lisa, yeah.
So what I'm hearing is to be the best at the Tonglen, you would have more of a first responder type mindset where you're there and you're taking care of the business, but you're not allowing it to affect you. But like there's got to be some kind of level of mirror neurons that trigger your empathy. And so I guess if you don't have the story, then you can sit with the crying. Like if they're crying, I mean, like you, not like sobbing, but like tears because you know the pain. I don't know. But if a first responder wouldn't cry, so then you would have to back off. So it's like a dance. It's like a fine dance, I guess. We'll get there, I'm sure.
That's interesting. You know, Lisa, I don't know enough about what first responders do to keep them level. You know, I don't know. So I don't know that I can answer that. You'll figure that out and let us know someday. Because I just know in the military, and I just heard this recently from somebody else, and I remember Kriyananda saying it in his tapes, and I literally just heard this again from somebody. The way they train people to be able to go out and kill, oh, it was in this class I'm taking, and one of the guys, yeah, you are not allowed to see the quote unquote enemy as people. You are trained to see them as, what was the word he used? Does anybody know what is the word they use? It's not, you don't see them as a person. You see them as a target. Maybe that's it. A target. And you literally dehumanize them, and you see, because the military knows that you don't have the capacity to kill something that you see is like you. It's just so traumatic. So you have to train people to see it as, Anisha may be right. Maybe the word is a target. It's just a target. It's just a target. It's just a target. And so I don't know what first responders are trained to able to be so calm and, you know, just triage, proactive in the moment. So I don't want to pretend to try and answer that. But what I do know is this is not about empathy. Empathy is about joining someone in the emotion, feeling their pain, feeling their emotion. And when you're feeling it with them, there's nothing you can do. You're down in there with them. Okay. So empathy has its place, but empathy is not compassion. Compassion is, And I want you to know that there's different schools of thought on this. Compassion is recognizing. It's like it's almost like you go through empathy, but when you come into compassion, you're not in the soup. You are understanding. You are, there's no judgment. There's no pity. It is a place of, yes, just like me, we felt this. I have felt this too. It's an equality that the way I say it, I'm not coming up with another word, is the equality that says, I believe in you. The compassion says, I'm here with you, and I know that you have the capacity to move through this, just like I did. And yeah, Lisa.
But not because of any merit they have, but because we know that the entire ocean is in a single drop. And that our higher power knows all, and they have that same.
They have
and
that
so
same.
So that's what we know in them they can attain, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to do with what they've done in their life.
Right. I think that's actually really well said. Because remember, what we're not trying to do is we're not trying to fix anybody. We're not trying to solve a problem. And this is where the roads diverge. There's two different types of schools of compassion being taught out there right now. One is a compassionate activism, where the compassion awakens to do something, to go be, to get involved with an organization, to provide homes for the homeless, meals for the, you know, and that there's nothing wrong with that. That is one way. I have found that it's compassion for me has worked the best when I do what Lisa said. I believe in their intrinsic knowing and wisdom somewhere deep inside them. And maybe it's not going to be in this life, but eventually they will find it. And what I can believe in them. I can believe in it, and I can be that hope, that compassion that's there. I know how you feel. I know how you feel. And my compassion is infused with belief. And so, I don't know. Did that answer it? Yeah. Okay. Because believe me, if your compassion has any pity in it, it's not compassion. If your compassion has any judgment in it, it's not compassion. If you're trying to fix or solve, that's not compassion. Compassion is literally being equal. Just being equal and saying, and sometimes it means saying, which I said recently to somebody, well, I actually haven't been exactly in that situation, but I do know what fear feels like. I do know what loss feels like, right? Are you hearing me? It's like you don't have to have been in the exact situation, but fear is fear, right? Loss is loss. Anger is anger. We do know on some raw level what these emotions feel like because we're courageous. And we're not running away, and we're learning how to lean in and be with these places that we would call suffering. Okay, so any other questions on this before we're going to need to take a break here in a minute? So let's do this. Let's take a break. I'm having this funny feeling we may not get to check in today. Which is kind of what happened last week, right? But this Tong Glen to me is kind of like the final little icing on the cake. Everything we've been doing is leading to this. So this is my priority for the day, is to make sure I take you into this next experience of Tong Glen. So let's take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to show you how we can find that bodhicitta, that place of compassion, if we're not living in the vajra of compassion at all times, which most of us aren't. So why don't we come back at, could we come back at 5:02? Would that be enough time? 5:02? Let's do it. Okay. I'll see you then, everybody.